From the World Newsroom in Boston, I'm Patrick Cox, and this is The World in Words number 12. This week, fear and language on the presidential trail. For many voters, bilingual is a dirty word. So what's a candidate to do? Also, we'll check in on that love, sometimes hate affair between French and English.
As a free man, I take pride in the word Ich bin ein Berliner.
Why, as an American, do I have to push a button to speak English?
There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Thank you, Borat. The World is a co-production of the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. The Big Show is on 230-plus public radio stations around the U.S. For more on that and for info about all our podcasts, go to theworld.org. To start things off this week, we're going presidential. Recently, John McCain and Barack Obama had things to say on the subject of language. We're going to hear from both of them. First, McCain. This is an exchange at a town hall-style meeting that McCain held in Pipersville, Pennsylvania on June 30th. And you can really sense the intensity of feeling in this woman's question and the reaction of the people there.
Why, as an American, do I have to push a button to speak English or hear English?
Go ahead. I think you struck a nerve.
I tell you, I really get ticked. I really do.
I can tell.
And then you go into Lowe's and it says Entrada. And any...
There's a great thing about America, and that is that we welcome all cultures from all over the world. We are the great, great nation that brings people together from all different backgrounds and languages and cultures. And we love the Hispanic heritage. We love the Irish heritage. We love all of the heritage that has enriched our country, but English must be learned by everybody.
So that's John McCain on learning English. Barack Obama has made similar comments that all immigrants should learn English. But the two candidates don't agree on whether English should be made the official language of the United States. McCain sort of supports that, but he has caveats and he doesn't really like to talk about it anyway. Obama opposes official English. And that's what he was talking about a few days ago in a suburb of Atlanta.
I don't understand when people are going around worrying about, we need to have English only. They want to pass a law, we want English only. Now, I agree that immigrants should learn English. I agree with that. But understand this. Instead of worrying about whether immigrants can learn English, they'll learn English. You need to make sure your child can speak Spanish. You should be thinking about how can your child become bilingual. We should have every child speaking more than one language. You know, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing when Europeans come over here. They all speak English, they speak French, they speak German. And then we go over to Europe. And all we can say is, merci beaucoup.
Okay, The World's Matthew Bell joins me now. He's covering the presidential election. Matthew, what was the reaction to those comments?
The reaction was swift. I think I got an email message there within minutes after Obama made those comments, and it was from an anti-immigration group. Basically, it was interpreted as, here is Obama telling Americans they should be forced to learn to speak Spanish. Obama evidently felt compelled to respond a few days later, and he basically chalked it up to a political cheap shot and seemed to imply that he wasn't telling Americans they should be forced to learn Spanish, but really what he was trying to do is to tell people, look, how could you disagree with the idea that we should all be multilingual? We should study other languages.
Now, these groups, they don't like John McCain any more than they do Barack Obama. McCain has gone on record as having supported bilingual education. just like Barack Obama. That's not what is expected of a Republican presidential candidate.
Absolutely. You heard constantly from these groups and from McCain's opponents during the primary season about the McCain-Kennedy immigration reform bill. McCain, to them, represents amnesty, represents what they would call open borders, represents the idea that bilingual education is okay. Now, the truth is McCain and Obama are very close on the fundamentals of these issues, but McCain doesn't really want to talk about it that much because it riles up this wing of the Republican Party. Interesting to note that in the past, McCain has voted for an amendment to make English the official language of the United States. But there was an interesting moment last summer in a CNN debate when the issue came up explicitly and Wolf Blitzer asked if English should be the official language of the United States. And McCain didn't support that idea. And he talked about the rights of Native Americans to have their own language and sort of downplayed this idea that there's this language boogeyman that's going to make the United States a multilingual society. So it's interesting how he sort of skirts the line.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, here you have these two candidates who basically agree on the big fundamental questions around language, and yet clearly they're jostling for position when it comes to votes and implying certain promises as regards immigration reform in future years.
Yeah, clearly immigration reform is sort of the big backdrop here, and both McCain and Obama know it. Obama's even said explicitly to numerous Hispanic and Latino activist groups during speeches that, hey, the vote is in your hands. They're talking about Florida, Texas, New Mexico, several other states where the Latino vote is seen to be very important. Look at McCain's trip down to Colombia and Mexico. It's really front and center for both of the campaigns.
That's The World's Matthew Bell. You can get all the details on Matthew's election podcast at theworld.org. And before we leave presidential politics, it's worth noting that much of this year's campaign is taking place in Spanish. Each candidate has Spanish-speaking proxies who deliver speeches and voice radio and TV ads. And then there are the unofficial songs contributed by supporters, whether the campaigns like them or not. Here, Barack Obama has a huge edge.
Al candidato, ¿quién es Barack Obama? Este corrido le canto con el alma, humilde fue nacido, también sin pretensión.
Empezó. Now, if you don't like mariachi, but you are an Obama supporter, you do have other options. There's the sensitive folk song.
¿Cuál fue la causa de esta guerra? ¿Quién hace dinero de este mal? ¿Quién votó a favor de esta tragedia? ¿Y quién nos dijo la verdad? Con él sí se puede. Sí se puede cambiar.
And if that isn't your cup of tea, how about some reggaeton?
¿Cómo se dice? ¿Cómo se llama? Obama, Obama. ¿Cómo se dice?
Yep, Barack Obama can count on many musical styles among his Spanish-speaking supporters. That is not the case with John McCain. If you, podcast listener, have come across any song in support of McCain, sung in Spanish or any other foreign language, please let me know. Till then, I have no option but to entertain you with this English language number from some McCain supporters.
If you want Barack out, you better get the vote out for McCain. Someone who's proud of what this country's about, McCain. He's alright, he's alright, and we like McCain.
If you didn't pick up on the original song there, it is Cocaine. Not really something that the McCain presidential campaign is likely to want to associate itself with. Now, we're going to do a couple of stories on English and French, the influence of each on the other. First to France, where English is increasingly being used in the workplace of larger multinational companies, much to the consternation of some locals. Here's a report from Genevieve Auger in Paris.
Jesse, we are waiting for you!
I'm coming!
When a character in a recent comedy returns from the United States speaking a mix of French and English, French audiences found it funny. But they're not amused by the growing use of English in the workplace. Some have formed a protest group calling itself the Collective for the Right to Work in French. Former diplomat Albert Salon is a founding member.
We are fighting against the habit in big, globalized French firms to impose English as a working language among the upper and middle management, and also in the software they use for their daily work.
The collective is made up of union representatives and citizens groups. It maintains French workers are tired of being forced to communicate in English. Muriel Tardito is a personal assistant at an insurance company. She says this trend of using English has led to the creation of a ridiculous franglais in the office, which goes something like this.
Je travaille dans l'open space du commercial où mon boss me forward mes outlook. Je dois lui faire un reporting chaque semaine lors d'un one-to-one.
French has always borrowed English words and vice versa. French intellectuals have long tried to prevent English terms from seeping into the French lexicon. The French finance ministry even has a commission charged with finding French alternatives to English terms, such as golden parachute and podcasting. Still, companies across Europe are making the leap to English. German pharmaceutical group Bayer changed its working language from German to English about 10 years ago. And French telecommunications group Alcatel is in the process of establishing a new language policy after merging with Lucent. The experience isn't always successful, though. Walmart pulled out of Germany last year, losing $1 billion in the process. Critics say the company made a lot of mistakes there, including imposing English as the official language. But Philip McLaughlin, the head of the Bordeaux Business School, says there's really no way to avoid English in a globalized economy.
Any company, whether they be French or Spanish, ultimately is linked into the world market. And once again, the lingua franca is English. So the business one is to facilitate communication eventually, to get people when they're working, even in France, to be at ease with English so that English is no longer, in inverted commas, a foreign language, but is purely the tool for everyday communication.
French law officially requires companies operating in France to function in French. But the Collective for the Right to Work in French says many workers don't want to take the issue up with their boss. However, 2 years ago, unions successfully sued a unit of General Electric for failing to provide security manuals and other technical information in French. Next month, an insurance company will be in court to face similar charges. And there are likely to be more such cases as companies increasingly merge across borders. For The World, I'm Genevieve Auger in Paris.
I emailed Genevieve after I heard that piece. I was interested in the term the French finance ministry had come up with for podcast. Well, it turns out that there is a French word for this, though very, very few people use it. Everyone just says podcast or podcasté if you're using the term as a verb. The French word for podcast is, and pardon my French, baladodiffusion. It may actually have been imported from the Canadian province of Quebec. The provincial government there has an office of the French language, and it's extremely active in dreaming up new words for English technical terms. And the provincial government has the power to shut down businesses that don't display the French language in logos or signs. Now, that's led to a big exodus over the past couple of decades. Tens of thousands of English speakers have left Quebec for other parts of Canada. Many of them feel they've surrendered their culture to language laws that were passed on behalf of other people, of the French-speaking majority. But some of Quebec's younger English speakers, they don't feel that loss of legacy. In fact, they're quite proud of their own ability to speak both English and French. And when they speak English, it is peppered with French words, often Québécois French words. Here's a story I reported a few years ago. If you live in New York or Los Angeles, you might occasionally catch yourself speaking that hybrid of Spanish and English known as Spanglish. In Quebec, the linguistic mélange is franglais. French purists, of course, have long frowned on the pollution of anglicisms in their language. The English words are inescapable, both during the week and at le weekend. But Quebec's language laws, now more than 20 years old, have reversed that trend. French pollutions, or as linguists call them, interferences, are entering the English language. So, in Quebec, English speakers now slug shots of whisky blanc, eat pizza all dressed, and do their late-night shopping at the dépanneur or dep.
The dep.
The dep.
The dep. Yeah, we go to the dépanneur. Dépanneur. The corner store.
These 20-something Montrealers eating dinner are English speakers at home. It's their first language. But at work and college, they parle français. As they hop back and forth between the two languages, interferences abound.
One of the really common ones is the word stage, which is like the internship that you do. So, for example, as a teacher, I did a 3-month stage, and there was never a question that you were going to call it the training or the internship. It's too long and cumbersome. You just say, where did you do your stage? You know, it doesn't matter what domain you're in.
What domain?
Yeah, domain's another one. You would normally say field, but you're so used to hearing domain and stage, and there's no turning back.
English-speaking Quebecers are adopting a plethora of French-influenced terms. So when you leave the room, you close the lights, as in fermer les lumières. When you want to rent an apartment, you must specify whether you want a 1.5 or a 2.5, as in rooms. And when something is in poor taste, you declare it to be quétain.
Sometimes a word will express an idea so perfectly, and you cannot express it quite so perfectly in the other language, right?
The cinq-à-sept.
Yeah.
After work, you'll go to a cinq-à-sept, yeah, which is the happy hour.
We say cinq-à-sept all the time.
Yeah. Maybe a little too much.
Cinq-à-sept, which means 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., certainly rolls easily off the tongue, as does valoriser, a snappier expression than the English to make more important in people's consideration. Valoriser is a favorite of Catherine Barber, one of the few linguists who have studied what's now being called the Quebec English dialect.
What was considered to be linguistically interesting about Quebec was the French that was spoken there and how it was influenced by English. There was a great hue and cry, actually, about Anglicisms in Quebec French, and no one ever stopped to look at Quebec English as a phenomenon.
Barber, who is editor-in-chief of the Canadian Oxford English Dictionary, says English-speaking Canadians have in fact been borrowing French expressions for centuries. Most of the words don't make it out of Quebec, but a few do.
A very recent borrowing in the food category is poutine, which is a dish of French fries with cheese curds and gravy, which seems to have actually caught on outside of Quebec just in the last 10 years.
It has caught on, but sometimes it loses a little something in the translation.
Many Canadians first encountering this word have vague memories of the French they learned in school, and they think that, oh, I have to use a nasal vowel of some sort, and so they pronounce it poutin, which unfortunately is the French word for whore or prostitute. That's an odd thing to be asking for in your local Burger King.
That elementary mistake is less likely to occur among Quebec's English speakers, well-versed as they are in French. It wasn't always so. Here at the Montreal dinner party, yeah, Cynthia Gregoire recalls how her grandmother, an English speaker from Quebec, insisted on sticking to her mother tongue.
She was married to a Frenchman and never learned to speak French.
So they never spoke French at home?
No.
Did he speak French to you?
No.
Cynthia Gregoire also grew up in an almost completely English environment, but now in her 20s, she considers herself bilingual.
I've learned more French just by being around French people, having French roommates, hearing it. You just have to be around the French and you pick it up.
And the possibilities for picking it up are far greater than they used to be. Montreal, for example, was once a divided city, with English speakers on the west side and French speakers on the east. Now that's breaking down. This dinner party is at the home of an English speaker living in one of Montreal's traditionally French quarters. In Quebec's workplaces, by law, French must be used. And even when lawyers write legal briefs for an English-speaking client, they use French legalisms. So civil liability becomes delictual liability, and mortgage becomes hypothetic, which law student Yves Sagui notes can lead to confusion.
If we're writing an opinion for a law firm in Ontario who is interested in maybe getting an understanding of what the state of the law is in Quebec, we have to watch out, even though we're speaking the same language and we're even speaking the same professional language.
These English speakers tend to look fondly on the Gallicisms in their language. It's a far cry from the bitterness felt by thousands of English speakers who once dominated Montreal's business and cultural life, but fled Quebec's so-called language police. Until just a few years ago, as teacher Jeff Cowley puts it, Most of Quebec's English speakers ignored the province's French-speaking majority.
People were still resisting the idea of French, and now I think they've come to terms with it. The benefits outweigh the negative, because it's a different way of looking at the world. It's a good thing.
A good thing, and an all-dressed thing, a Saint-Cassette dépanneur thing, and most certainly a poutine, not poutin thing. That's it for this edition of The World in Words. I'm Patrick Cox. Go to theworld.org for more about our show. Join the Facebook group, The World in Words, and send me your comments. The address is language@pri.org. And thanks for listening. A bientôt.